Hey there, podcast fans. I've got a special treat for you. I'm here with your favorite podcast host, Barbara Bray. What's up?
What's up, Andrew? I love this.
Hi.
We have so much fun together. I mean,
me too.
It's really, I mean, people don't know that this is the time we get together and we can just chat.
Yeah, we had a phone conversation earlier, and I had my three-year-old wiggler, my three-year-old son, just jumping and bopping and hopping around. So this is one of the few times where we get to have some focused time where it's just the two of us.
And I love it. It's so great because we don't live close, but we can sure be close.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's so nice, Andrew.
Yeah, and I'm always grateful to share smiles with you and get some much needed laughs during the gray weather.
I know.
It's late February up here in Portland, Oregon, and it's Cloud City. So bring on the smiles.
I have to say, I'm in Oakland, California. We've had 2 weeks of rain. We've never had this much, and more's on the way, they said. So
all right, good luck. Bring your umbrella and your snorkel.
I know. It's crazy.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about this next conversation?
This lady, I have known for several years, but I never really knew her that well. It's Kat Crawford. I just love her. I love her because she has so much energy, and I learned so much about her when I met her last year at South by Southwest CDU, and she was just huggable and sweet, and she was the lunch lady. I mean, really, she dresses as the lunch lady, and she just shares, you know, how you can take a little bite of this, you know, you can savor learning this way, and she has it all so beautifully all encompassed. But what I found out was that she was a theater person like you, Andrew. She went to a theater school in London for 4 years and then came back to the States and went from Michigan to New York to actually make it big in Broadway. I mean, she tried all these things. And now she's using these theatrical things for her in education. And I mean, she just wows everybody. She's done keynotes and all these things. I just love her.
Well, you're telling me that she's got a bit of a stand-up heart as well, and that there might be, it's not technical difficulties, it's laughing difficulties for the upcoming conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Is that right?
Well, I was laughing a lot because she's just got so many. She has so many fun experiences that she shared that I don't want to give them all away. I want people to listen because she goes, you know, I lived in London for a little bit. Do you want me to talk in London, my accent?
Ooh, that sounds so nice.
Yeah, go ahead. Yes. You know, but she's just, it's one of these that it was one of the easiest conversations because she's just, she's so caring and listens and knows how to really make the conversation flow. So you're going to love it.
All right. Stick around, everybody, with a giggly Barbara Bray and Kat Crawford.
Oh, everybody. I've been wanting this woman on my show for so long. Oh, Kat Crawford, I'm so happy you're here.
I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, well, you know, it's like every time I see you at one of the conferences, You just made me bring a big smile to my face.
Well, thank you. I so appreciate that. I look forward to any time I see that you're headed to the same place as me. And I know we're going to connect and get to see each other in the hallway or get to see each other at a book signing line.
Yeah.
All of that stuff. That's where all the good memories are made.
Well, definitely. I'm into connections and I'm glad we're connected and we can do this wonderful time on my virtual porch. So I want to introduce you to everyone, and I'm reading everything about you and I'm just can't wait to share it. So ready?
I'm ready. I'm excited.
Okay. Kat Crawford, an instructional designer and justice and accessibility advocate. Wait a minute. I didn't know that last one.
You didn't know about that? Oh,
no.
Well, I have so much to tell you.
Oh, I can't wait to go into that. That's really big. Okay. And Kat specializes in designing innovative digital solutions, facilitating professional learning and supporting the transformation of school systems to enhance student engagement. And I've seen you in action.
I love presenting and also just getting people excited about something that they didn't think was possible before the conversation started.
Oh, gosh. And we're going to be at some conferences together again. So I'm really excited about that. But this big one I didn't know about is you never really left the stage. You simply traded the bright lights of theater class for designing learning experiences that students want to eat up as the lunch lady.
Uh-oh, I feel like the cat's out of the bag. Definitely, now we've introduced the alter ego to the chat. So yes, the lunch lady is new to my repertoire, but I just love the opportunity to kind of share from a different sassy character's perspective.
Oh, it's so cool. We're going to go into a lot of detail on this one because it's so much fun. But you did spend over a decade, disrupting the technology divide inside secure schools. And that's fueled by your core belief that every student deserves a seat at the table and a learning experience worth savoring. Oh my gosh, you're using the lunch lady thing.
It's so easy, right? When you have something like that, to just build that theme into everything that you talk about. And food, I feel like, and education just go hand in hand.
I have to get my food. I'll have my coffee while I'm with you.
Yeah, me too. Cheers.
On my porch. Yes, yes. So I always like to know, and I always ask, what is your why, that purpose behind all of this? What is that?
I think for me, my why is that everyone deserves a high quality education. And that's that like seat at the table, whatever your situation might be, where you're living, what type of school you're going to, what type of learner you are. I was definitely unique in my learning journey. And so I always appreciated when someone created a space for me that allowed me to shine.
Well, and I'm going to ask you about that learning journey because I was a misfit. I was told that I had a learning disability and had problems with reading. And I'm like, I'm reading to my sisters. And I didn't understand it. So I was tracked. I don't know if that happened to you or something like that.
So for me, it was more that I definitely found out much later that I was ADHD. That wasn't, unfortunately, an option in the 80s. So they ticked that box. I also am dyslexic. So yeah, that was really huge. And it's caused so many interesting moments in my life. One of my favorites was for a while in my role at Break Free, I was in charge of sending out newsletters, which, by the way, thankfully they took away from me. But there was a newsletter that I sent out that was supposed to be like sneak peek. But I spelled peak like the mountain. So it was a sneaky mountain. Yeah. And so it just follows you your whole life, right?
Well, now with AI, they could probably fix it.
I know.
Oh, wow. So how did things happen then? How did it change? Where did you get that feeling that you wanted to teach or you wanted to, you went into theater. What was it that changed?
Yeah. So I actually was always in theater, but I think in theater, you naturally also go into education. So you start directing or coaching or working with teams of students who are younger than you. So I did all of that throughout middle school and high school. So I like went back in high school and coached our middle school forensics teams. I directed forensics and like one act plays when I was in high school. I went to a theater camp, but then I taught at the theater camp.
Oh, wow.
So I think teaching is just kind of built into that like theater cycle. The more you do it, the more likely you are to be in front of a group of people and being asked to kind of instruct them in some way or direct them. So that was always there. I would go spend the summers with my dad. He lived in upstate New York and he lived on a cul-de-sac, and we would pull in from the airport and all of the children would come out of their houses. They called me like the Pied Piper. And I would run like a summer camp for all the kids all summer long. So I wasn't that much older than them, but I would be coordinating like a water balloon fight at 4 o'clock. And we're going to get all this dish soap and like go sledding in the summer down the front yard. So I kind of had free rein to create those systems and like plan activities. So I think that was always just inherent in who I was in coordinating people and directing. But then I did study musical theater. I came back after studying in London. I was there for 3 years and got my bachelor's in musical theater at Mount View Theater School. Yeah,
wow. I mean,
in a good British accent. So if you want, we can do the rest of the show in. and then I moved back to the States in 2000 and I moved to New York City because I was like, well, I guess, you know, got to go make it somewhere. I'm going to head off to Broadway, see what happens. And I started working in theater. I had an opportunity to be a prop shopper. Which was like one of the coolest jobs I ever had. I got paid to go shopping for shows.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I like that.
I know, right? Like, this is right up my alley. This is amazing. And then I got an opportunity to be a stage manager and work backstage on a couple shows. And one of them turned into like an experience of getting my equity card. So thing that was really interesting for me is I think I was very myopic when I was going into theater. Even in college, I was like, I'm going to be an actress. And I didn't know that there were all of these other things that I could do that would fulfill that need that I had. And so that was kind of a really great experience. I got to try out a ton of different jobs, things I never even knew were possible growing up. And so while I was chipping away at that piece of my life, 9/11 happened.
Oh, yeah. Right after. Oh, gosh.
And that was like one of the first times that a lot of Broadway stuff went dark. A lot of us lost our jobs and we really just didn't know what the future was going to hold for that. It was just a really scary time. So they were advertising on television that if you had your bachelor's degree, you could come down to New York City Public School office, bring your bachelor's degree credentials, and you would be teaching in a high school or middle school tomorrow. So I brought my stuff down. And the following Tuesday after 9/11, I was an English teacher at John Adams High School in Ozone Park, Queens.
Oh my gosh, an English teacher. And you had, did you have the background for that? I mean,
I think because we had so many classes that were in like playwriting and like scripting, there was just like enough of the theater degree to make me highly qualified in 2001. I don't know if I would have met the qualifications today, but yeah.
That's cool though.
And then you could still teach one class out of subject area. So
drama.
I wish, right? No, yeah. It was economics, earth science. yeah. So I got to get really creative with those classes that really were not in my wheelhouse and had a lot of fun kind of coming up with what the content would be. But I think that's the benefit of being in theater is that you just, I saw it as like another part. Like today I have to play the part of the earth science teacher. Like what would the earth science teacher say to you?
And you just get the lesson plan and you follow it.
Right. Yeah.
But then you add a little touch to it.
Yeah, you have to change outfits because the earth science teacher wouldn't wear what the English teacher was wearing, obviously.
I know my children went to a school where there was a performing arts department. That's how my son got into it. But there was one teacher that was a science teacher who dressed the part of all the scientists. And sometimes she was Mendel when they were doing genetics. And
yeah,
I thought it was really cool that you could, I mean, you're engaging the kids because you're like that, right?
God, I mean, so that's cool. The fun of it. You're actually reminding me that I was working in a school district where we were going for IB certification for International Baccalaureate certification. And the team from the IB comes out and like interviews everyone. And they had like all of the misfit teachers, you know, so we were the United Arts teachers. So it was the theater teacher, the technology teacher, the culinary arts teacher. They'd already messed with all of the important teachers. So we were just kind of like the last group of the day. And they'd gotten something mixed up where they thought I was the technology teacher and the guy next to me who looked like pretty much like the guy from the Mac and Windows ads, but he looked like the Windows guy. He was the tech teacher. They thought he was the drama teacher. Oh, and no. He and I just played it off for the rest of the meeting. We're like, we'll just see how this goes.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
I know.
I mean, they're just assuming that because you look a certain way, you must be. Right. I don't know. That's so weird. Well, that is fun. So you learn to adapt because that's what you do in the theater. You end up adapting to the part.
Yeah.
And then you played the part.
I think we do that every day. There's so much. I actually think the theater lens has actually helped me more in tech than anything else. I mean, I jokingly say, yeah, I was a theater teacher playing a technology teacher. And now, of course, I work in tech. But, you know, I think things go wrong in tech all the time. And a big part of my first big role in technology, my title was Director of Technology Solutions. My job was to figure out what to do when stuff went wrong and didn't work. Mm-hmm. And that is very much lends itself to the way that we think divergently as actors. We're coming up with 800. Well, if this doesn't work, then we'll try it this way. If this doesn't work, then we'll try it that way. And some of them are bizarre. Like they're just, I got a good one for you. Ready for a good one?
Okay, I want it.
Okay, so coming back from a conference, I think it was ISTE a couple of years ago. A good friend of mine, Nicole Lips, she's absolutely amazing. She makes all of this. She's so crafty. She's so incredible. So she sent me these directions to make these craft earrings out of the shrinky dink paper. But I could not get the shrinky dink paper to print, Barbara.
Oh.
No matter what I did, I could not get it to print. And I'm on Reddit and I'm on YouTube and I'm almost on the dark web. I'm almost
uh-oh,
there.
Uh-oh.
Like, I need to figure this out. I'm so out of resources. So I look at the paper and on the packaging, it says A4. Well, my British brain says, oh, that's a British size of paper. So maybe I have it set to American settings and this is why it's not printing.
Oh no.
So I go into my printer and I change its belief that it's located in the United States and tell it's located in the UK.
Oh no.
See if it will print. That wasn't the solution. I did figure it out. And I will tell you the solution was the paper was too clear. So the printer actually didn't register it and you had to tape a piece of paper underneath it so that it could see it and read it as being in the printer. And that I did end up finding on Reddit. So thank you, Reddit.
Oh God, isn't it amazing now? I mean, there's so much you can find out now with AI. I mean, because it grabs from Reddit and it grabs from everything, but it's amazing.
But this is like the productive struggle that we don't talk enough about, right? We post the end product.
Yeah.
We don't talk about all the crazy stuff in the middle when we, for some reason, thought we could change the origin of our printer. And for some reason, that was solved the problem.
Long time ago when ISTE was neck, it's a long, way long time ago, internet wasn't even around. And when the internet came, I was all excited of sharing it, but they didn't know how to get it to work. So I'm up there talking and we couldn't get my online. So I just said, if you could see it, it would look like this.
Nice.
And I had everyone laughing. So I guess I'm, have a little bit of theater in me too. But sometimes you have to because things happen.
And you were modeling too for exactly what we do when the stuff breaks. And I think that's really huge from a theater perspective as well, is like our kids are watching us when we have that tantrum or that meltdown when the printer doesn't work or the projector won't turn on. So I love that you did that because that's going to stick in people's minds and they're going to model exactly what you taught them in the future.
Oh, I have lots of fun things too, but I want to hear about you because you went from theater and you became an English teacher. Then you became a technology leader. But wait a minute, I'm missing a part. How did you get there?
So I taught English for a little while, and then I actually moved back to the town that I grew up in, spent most of my years going to school in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. So I went back there for a little while. I taught in the district that I grew up in, which was really interesting. Yeah. I actually got to teach with teachers who taught me. So that was kind of fun. And they were probably like, wow, they let this one back in. yeah, it was really cool. And then from there, I decided to move down to Austin because I just saw this as being a space of kind of growth. I think, you know, 15 years ago when I came here, like tech was just starting to kind of boom in Austin, and it's just grown exponentially since. And I was doing some degrees in ed tech. I came down, I was an IB coordinator for a year because I had some experience in doing that back in my district in Michigan. And then I happened to meet the most amazing person, Amy Lopez. She was a superintendent over all of the Texas Juvenile Justice Department schools. And she kind of took a chance on me. We both had a theater background. And she said, you know, come on in, let's think about how we can shift and transform and disrupt technology inside of these secure spaces. And it was from that that I met David, who runs Break Free Education, and did that work there for many years. And you know Kayla, so we worked.
Yes. Oh, I love her.
So we worked together in that space for a long time. And then, you know, just have been working as kind of a consultant since.
Well, it's amazing because I know I've actually seen you with Kayla. Kayla Holland, she's been on my show. So we could also put a link to hers. But it's like you learn. It's amazing when you get these connections and then you realize how much you have in common, you know, because I didn't even know about you with some of these things about the coaching, you know, with the technology that would lead from theater, which you said that you worked in different districts. Were you a consultant then? I mean, when
So after I left Break Free, I was doing a lot of consulting work with the Schlechte Center. And so I was working with districts across the nation. Really, I kind of took a step back in the school to prison pipeline. So my goal there was to see what we could do to kind of disrupt policy and think about how students were flowing from a traditional public school environment into their alternative schools with inside of a district to prevent them from even ending up in a secure school space. And there's just so much work to be done in those spaces. That was really interesting. And getting to travel around and meet so many districts doing powerful work. It's tough work.
Oh, you know? It is. I mean, if you're, I mean, traditional schools are so built in to try to change them, especially for kids that, you know, think differently. We all think differently, though. So did you work? So you worked outside of the state or?
I've worked in 47 different states across the U.S. So,
oh, my gosh. Yeah. So you got to go to the last few.
Yeah, I know. I do. I'm like trying to close the gap there and make sure that I hit them all. You know, maybe I get a T-shirt or something at the end of it. But I love to travel too. So I have a definite travel bug. I'm kind of like, you know, when a kid gets excited to go to the airport and get on a plane, I still have that at 47. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm a lot older than you, and I still feel that way. I love flying. It sounds weird. I have people that won't even get on a plane in my family. I just love it. I love to be able to go places and meet new people and learn about new areas. So you'll have to tell me which states you haven't been to, and maybe I can connect you.
Yes, that would be perfect. I love it. I mean, if you know anyone in North Dakota, that one's always been the toughest.
I know people. Well, I do know Howard County. I think it's North Dakota, but I worked in South Dakota. Did you work there? You worked there?
Yeah.
Too? Oh, wow. Well.
We'll get it.
We'll get it. You know, there's so many wonderful things. Okay, because I'm going to go back just to what I said in the introduction about you being a justice and accessibility advocate, because that, I'm telling you, that is big right now. And I've worked with CAST. I have two books on UDL. So about accessibility, it means a lot to me too. Can you tell me how that happened?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It's not something that I sought out. I think it's just something that my neurodivergence required. And it just clicked. I think some of these things have always just kind of made sense to me, that it was a gut check that this is the way things should be done. So I like to ask myself a big question, no matter what I'm facing, whether it's a policy issue or we're looking at, you know, how a student is going to receive a consequence or what type of accommodation or accessibility needs have to be put in place. And I just ask myself, is this in the best interest of kids?
Did that come out of the work that you did? You said the Schlechte Center?
I think a lot of this work came out of my work at Break Free.
Okay.
One thing that's really interesting is, and that a lot of people probably don't know, is that justice-involved youth tend to have very high rates of special ed diagnoses. Mm-hmm. And some of them come to us at 15. They haven't even been diagnosed officially. They don't have an IEP. They're not receiving services. We've seen places where the numbers can be 40%. We've seen places where it can be 60%. Just depends on the space, right? And so I think that work really kind of drew me to thinking a little bit more about what those needs might be. But also, I led a lot of focus groups in both the work at Break Free and at the Schlechte Center. In fact, I know I saw you at South By last year. I had a workshop, and one of the things that we looked at was this focus group data. And we asked students who were formerly incarcerated, what was it in your home school? So that would be like their traditional public school, that really prevented you from being successful. What was it that worked for you? And then the same questions in their secure school. And then we took all of that data and we put it in front of these public school teachers who came to South By and said, what can we pull from this using some design thinking activities to really establish what needs to be done to prevent kids from ending up in a secure school? And so many of them have to do with overstimulation. So many of them have to do with just being overwhelmed by class size. Things as simple, Barbara, as if I asked you to repeat it, you tell me that you already said it once. Whereas in my secure school, if I ask my teacher to repeat it, she'll find six different ways to tell it to me until I understand it.
Oh, that's good. See, I get it, because there are kids that, I mean, we've been only taught through the standardized, you know, structure of school that there's only one way to teach to the same people. And we know, because of the work that you're doing, the work I did with Universal Design for Learning, is all of us think different. We all do. And if you have kids that are neurodivergent, but you also have them in situations where, my gosh, incarcerated. I mean, I know Kayla's book. Did you have some work in that book?
We worked together a little bit on some of that while she was developing.
Putting out fires, I think.
Putting out fire.
Wow. See, so that data, you probably put some of that in the book, right?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I'm going to have to go check and make sure now, because I have her book. But it's amazing to me that I still go into classrooms. They're still teaching traditionally, and you can see the kids that are missing it. It's just... Yeah.
One thing that you would really appreciate, this is always helpful to kind of set the tone with a group, but I often will ask this question of a large staff, especially when we're talking about policy and thinking about their discipline policies that are currently in place. And I'll say, if you feel comfortable, raise your hand if you've ever been pulled over.
Oh.
75% of the hands will go up in the room. Some people will elect not to participate, and that's totally fine. But we know that number is probably closer to like 85, 90%.
Wow.
Then I'll say, keep your hand up if you've been pulled over more than once, twice, three times, four, five. And then until we get down to like nobody else's hands are up. So usually those people who stayed the course to like 3 to 5, they're usually happy to share, right? They've got a big smile on their face. Everybody knows, oh yeah, they always get pulled over. You know, I've even had staff members be like, I just texted her this morning to tell her there was a police officer on the highway on the way here because I know she gets pulled. And this was like her principal. So what I say to that person is, what is it about that consequence that stopped you from speeding? And they usually say, obviously nothing, it didn't work, right? And yeah. So we talk more about how we often feel this like great need to like put a consequence on someone, whether that's a financial consequence of like, you know, took a car, joyrided it and like ruined someone's fence. And now you have to pay to have their fence rebuilt. This is this much money. Or we also have these other consequences that get kind of tacked on that have limitations. Like if you don't do this, you can't have your driver's license, which means you can't go to work or you can't take your kids to school or all these other things that are really impactful to the way that we live. And because $100 might not seem, or more, right? In some cases, a speeding ticket might not seem impactful to us because it might not stop us from putting food on the table or paying our rent. For some people, it does.
Wow.
And then the ramifications just build from there. So some people are willing to do something, even though they know it's not right, because the consequence isn't enough to make them change their behavior. And in fact, when I say to them, what fee would it have to be in order for you to stop speeding? Many of those people who raise their hands 3 to 5 times tell me there isn't a fee out there that would stop them from speeding.
Oh my gosh.
And these are the same people that are leading, you know, detentions and suspensions and sending kids to alternative schools. So I just feel like these are really important conversations to have, because for a lot of our kids who already feel like they're under the microscope, they've already been labeled a bad kid, they just keep going into that cycle. Send them to detention, send them to Saturday school, send them to a suspension.
And it doesn't make a difference.
It doesn't make a difference.
Yeah. Wow.
Because you haven't built a relationship, because you're not really digging into like what's happening under the surface, because it's still not really addressing the problem. So, you know, these are important conversations that I think lead back to why that justice and accessibility piece are so critical, because at the surface, we're often thinking about what was the behavior and what's the consequence. We got to get way deeper than that if we want to do this work.
It's about the relationships.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to turn, personally, I could talk to you all day about this because I love it, because just talking about the, you know, that focus using about speeding tickets is, everybody can relate to it. It's really great. But I want to talk about the lunch lady.
Okay, let's do it.
So tell me, you told me it's your alter ego. Really? How did it happen?
So at ISTE 2023 in Philly, am I getting my ears right? Yes. Stephanie Howell invited me to be a part of the Google Bake Off, which was featured in one of the playground sessions at ISTE. And everyone was dressing up like chefs. And so there was a big group chat and we had joined a couple of, you know, Zoom calls and everyone's planning, oh, I'm going to get this white coat and I'm going to get the chef's hat and I'm going to bring a bowl and a spatula. And it just, something in me was like, I'm just not the type of person that wants to look or dress like everyone else. It's just not who I am.
No.
and even if it was, I just don't conform into that, right? So it just doesn't work for me. I kind of have to own the fact that everything's a little different. So instead, I reached out to Stephanie and we were just starting to become friends. Now we're very close.
I said, hey,
do you mind if I maybe change it up a little bit? And I don't know what that is yet, but like, are we open to interpretation here? She's of course like, yeah, go for it. So I start doing some research, Barbara, and I'm trying to find and create a character that is somebody that I can relate to, somebody that maybe was missing in like my learning journey out there, especially in the conference world. And one thing that really struck me is that I don't have And I latch on to those who I do have, but I don't have a ton of plus size or, you know, larger, fluffy, whatever the word is that you want to use, role models out there in the tech world.
That's right.
So much of the tech world is been garnished around this like booth babe mentality, which we're all like, meh.
That's not me.
So many of the women that I met early on in the things that I was doing, whether it was like Google Innovator or just in the relationships that I was building and at Break Free when I was working with tools to bring their secure tool into our spaces, it was about like people who are like climbing mountains and rappelling off bridges. And that's just not me. I was like, I'm over here with my Oreos, like trying to understand. Okay. Oh my gosh. And so many conferences I would go to, they wouldn't have shirts in my size, or if they did, it could be like the world's largest company. We won't name names out here, but the shirt is so tiny that I feel uncomfortable just wearing it so I can present at their booth. And so all of that was like circling around in my head when I was searching, and I stumbled upon a video of a character that Chris Farley had created for SNL.
I knew it was going to be that.
I figured that there had been enough time passed that we could honor Chris Farley's great character. And I started to order all of the pieces to like create the lunch lady persona. I have a really close relationship with my bonus daughter's mom. She's absolutely amazing. And she printed the lunch lady logo on the apron for me and made that. So I just love that every little piece of who she is sort of just representative of all of the things that I value when I'm connecting with people.
Oh, I just, to me, you make, as soon as I saw it, because I was there at the, as soon as I saw it, I got to get to know her. I just love that. I mean, because I used to laugh so hard with Chris Farley, all the things he did. He was so amazing. And, you know, he was a very big guy, much bigger than you.
He was.
Really big.
But he really filled out the costume.
Yeah.
Anyways, I never will. Sorry. Well,
thank goodness. We don't want anything to happen to you. But I do tell you, it there's so many ways you can take it. And I saw that you are doing this at the next conference is Ties?
Yeah, NC Ties.
NC Ties, that's right.
Yeah, keynoting. And then I have a workshop and session as the lunch lady. I'm super excited. And it's going to be kind of an interesting one. So this keynote's going to be very different than when I did the lunch lady on the main stage at ISTE. That was really themed around student agency. This one is called Breakfast and Banter.
Oh, really? I got to change that on the Breakfast and Banter. Tell me more.
Well, you know how it's tough out there right now. No matter what industry you're in, but especially in education, things just don't seem to be going our way. So, you know, I was asked to do something that was a lot more just lighthearted and fun. And I was trying to think about what was it when I was in the classroom that kind of helped me get through those tough moments to those tough days. And really, it was these funny, but albeit very embarrassing moments that would happen along the way. So I sat on a plane. I was flying back from California to Austin for TCA. And I was just on the plane, just typing along. And what I remembered one or two stories. By the end of the flight, Barbara, I had 17 stories written down.
You're kidding. Are you going to share all of those?
Well, I'm sharing four. I'm going to share four of them. But there were just so many moments as a teacher that, you know, you have to just be sharing what these moments have, like what happens, because it's so unbelievable. I'll share one today with you if you'd like to hear it.
Okay. Yeah.
It's really interesting. So I actually got an opportunity to share this when I was at TCA. And I think it's just important for folks. And actually, today is a special day of this because today is actually the anniversary of the story in Sorts.
Oh,
so yeah, wow. Today is the 17-year anniversary of the finalization of my divorce.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this is gonna be interesting. Okay,
I know, it's a great story. Yeah. So I went back to my hometown to teach. I taught in a middle school that was not the middle school that I had grown up in. I love middle school, by the way. It is my favorite time.
I was a middle school teacher. Yes.
In the beginning of my keynote, I actually show pictures of myself in middle school because I used to do this on the first day of school to show students, like, look, it gets better. Like, I don't wear a back brace anymore and I don't have braces, right? I'm just, you know, still got frizzy hair and I'm fat, but it's okay. It's okay. Look, I don't have braces. That's a big deal. We've got the braces. But I moved back to the school and my assistant principal, she was very, very fun. She walked into my room and I had this huge classroom with the theater in it. It was beautiful. And she said, you're the newest teacher here. So you have to write your name on everything, because if you don't, it's liable to get poached.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. So you got to be careful. Like, people come in, coming back to school, they'll take your tables, they'll take your chairs, take your bookshelf. So you got to get in here and you got to put your name on everything. So I went out and I got one of those like chiseled tip Sharpies, like the real thick ones. And I put my last name on everything in that room, every bookshelf, folder, turn it in bin, everything had my name on it.
I know the, oh no, I know.
And then that following summer, I filed for divorce. It was finalized about 6 months later. So today, I came back to the classroom and the first week of school, my school secretary pulled me aside and said, hey, I just want to let you know that a bunch of parents have been calling in to ask about what happened with your divorce.
Oh.
She was like, don't worry. I told them it's none of their business, but I just wanted to give you a heads up. I was like, whoa, this is intense. And I don't know if it was because I had grown up there or what, just started to feel very much like a small town kind of gossip thing happened over here. That was hard. And then my 7th and 8th grade students, of course, they knew me with my old last name and then my new name.
Oh,
so they
no.
knew what had happened, right?
But not the new students.
Right. Oh, I'll get to them. They're my favorite. So I would get emails from my 7th and 8th grade students, and I'll do my impression of what these emails sounded like. So, because all of my students, remember, they all have braces and mouth gear. So they'd be like, dear Miss Crawford, I found a piece that I wanted to perform and catch, but the parents in the piece are getting divorced. I don't know if this topic is acceptable or if it's going to make you cry. Please let me know. Sincerely, Emily. So that's an actual email. I'm still friends with that student. And I did get her permission to use her email in my keynote. And I was like, no, it's okay. It's going to be okay. You can perform that piece. Everything's fine. But every day I walked into my classroom, every piece of furniture, everything had the old name on it.
The old name. Oh, no.
Reminder, right? So in come the 6th graders, and I have all of them, Barbara. I see every 6th grader on a rotation every 6 weeks.
Oh, dear.
So every time a group comes into my room, they're like, who's Mrs. Eatman? As they're like looking at the furniture. And I'm like, guys, you don't know? And they're like, no. So I took a page from my favorite book, Miss Nelson Went Missing. And I decided that I would tell them the story. And I was like, she was the meanest, cruelest drama teacher that this school has ever seen. They had to force her out of here. And she left behind all of her furniture as a reminder that any day she could come back and torment all the middle school children. And then they hired me, Miss Crawford.
Oh, you didn't do that, really?
Oh, I did. Oh, I really did. Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
So they knew to call you. And what do you do about all the Sharpie all over?
I just left it. I'm sure that somewhere right now there is a kid sitting in a blue chair that says Mrs. Eatman at the back of it. Little do they know, that 17-year-old chair is celebrating an anniversary right now.
Oh my God, you're so funny. I like that this is your theater background, that you could bring it in. I love it. So we're getting close on, you know, the time on my porch, but I do want to mention Figma because that's where you're working right now.
Yes. Well, I've been very lucky to have met this team. This is probably one of the most amazing groups I've ever worked with. Like, this team is family. I have felt at home with them since meeting them and working with them on the Creator Program, which is such a phenomenal way to get connected.
They helped
us kind of design templates that were for educators, and putting those templates out for free for other educators. Such an incredible way to launch a product into education. And I started working with them as a contractor last May. And I, since then, have had many hats and many roles. I'm currently the education program manager, taking over for a new maternity leave as of like less than a month ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's why when I went by, everyone was going to you.
At FETC, I got to lead our booth for the first time. So that was a really amazing experience. And I think professionally, like, if you ever get an opportunity to go work for a company that just allows you to try out a little bit of everything a la carte, like, go for it. Because I am learning about things that I would never have an opportunity to maybe get to flex, these new sets of skills or things that I didn't even know I could do until I got to work with this team. So I am really enjoying it.
Oh, I see it when I go by the booth and when I talk to you and when you're talking about all the different resources that they have and things they do. Yeah. It just comes across. I mean, one of the things I think that being, you know, with the theater background has really helped you, and you're modeling it for the other people. I know some of the other people there. They're friends also. So it's fun. It's fun to that you're in a good place like that. You also have your own company, though, right?
I do. I started doing some consulting work right before the pandemic. Perfect timing to launch a company.
No.
And it's called How Might We? And it really came out of learning a lot about design thinking through my time as a Google innovator. Mm. So that probably was one of the most impactful things of my career, was getting a framework and a vocabulary for a set of skills that I had, but I didn't know how to communicate or kind of utilize in the way that I do now.
Wow.
And it drew me to want to do more of that work in different capacities. And so How Might We was just that times a million, like, what could we do? How might we do this? Or how might we try that? And so it's been fun because it gives me the flexibility to do all different types of consulting work, whether it's in juvenile justice or it's my alter ego, the lunch lady. whatever it might be, I have the flexibility to kind of take those different opportunities and really turn them into something amazing.
Well, I see so many things for your future. I mean, because the way everything is going, we need you. We need the lunch lady. We need your humor. We need your background. And even with the accessibility background you have, especially now, I feel there's a lot of teachers and kids. I mean, and parents. I think we're all kind of in a part where we can need to come together. And you really, Kat, you really pull it together. I know there's one thing I want to ask is,
okay,
kind of, you mentioned something your what's next for you. And you mentioned travel. Is that really, I mean, like you really love it so much? And
yeah, I don't know how to explain it, but there's just something about going to a new space and meeting new people. I mean, people used to ask me like, where do you live? And I'd be like between aisles 14 and 16. So it's my sweet spot on the plane.
Oh, I have to look for you on the plane now.
But I just, there's something about getting to explore a new space, getting to see a new community and trying to understand kind of what the needs of that community is. And I love it. I got an opportunity to go to Singapore a couple years ago. And with that opportunity, met educators from 19 different countries. Wow. And I promised them that I would come visit all of them.
So, yes. Yes.
Still working on that. Yeah. So if anyone wants to fund a trip to 19 countries, I'm ready. Oh, I have my Singapore cup. Look at that.
I'm going to do it. We got our cups. Well, I think you're amazing. I was looking so forward to our conversation and it's like, I don't want it to end, but I know we're going to see each other again soon at different conferences too, but this is just, you're just amazing. I just love this time with you and learning about you and people out there in my audience. This lady is a keynoter. This lady is amazing. You have to, if you want to, just bring her to your country.
Yes.
Bring her to your country. So how can they get a hold of you? What is the best way to reach you?
Yeah, I'm kind of a zero inbox person. So if you DM me on socials or you email me, you're probably going to hear from me very quickly.
How do they do that? What is the?
Oh yeah, so I'm at Dramatic Cat pretty much everywhere, whether it's Gmail or on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, all of those at Dramatic Cat, and then
We might want to spell it out because I got it wrong when I.
I
forgot to put the C in.
Oh, yes. I've seen that. So yeah, the word dramatic and then K-A-T at the end.
That's it.
Or at lunchlady.edu. So either of those will get you in contact with me and hopefully we can work together and do great things.
Yes. I'm so happy. This has been the most wonderful conversation. Sometimes when you meet somebody, you go, I need to know more about them. And then when I get to know more about you, I just don't want to leave.
I know, right? Well, this is just such a great way to like wrap up what's been an incredibly busy week. So I just feel really fulfilled that we got to connect and kind of just circle back on and reflect on our connection and relationship and just build even deeper connections around some of the things that you and I are really passionate about. So thanks for doing that and just giving me that reminder like, hey there, I thought we were going to do a podcast together. Hello.
Oh, yeah, I had to do that. Yeah. It doesn't matter. I would keep after you because I'm glad I've been wanting to do this for a long time. So thank you so much. And I cannot wait to see you and give you a real hug, not a virtual one.
Yeah, me too. Well, thank you for having me. And I look forward to future conversations.
Thank you for listening to the Grow Your Why podcast and my conversation with Kat Crawford. I've known Kat for a long time. I knew her as the Lunch Lady, and I've been following her as Dramatic Cat on social media. I loved our conversation about her story as a theater major in London. I didn't know that. Kat's various jobs in the theater prepared her for all she did as a camp counselor and in education. I laughed about that one job she shared as the prop supplier because she loves shopping. So check out the blog post with all of her stories that Kat helped create. Those accompany the podcast on my website, barbarabray.net. Be sure to follow Kat and share this podcast and post with your friends. Thanks again for listening. Keep sharing your story and please stay safe and be well.